Good day, and welcome to SNC-Lavalin's second quarter 2015 earnings conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Denis Jasmin, Vice President of Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Sarah. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to SNC-Lavalin 2015 second quarter earnings conference call. Today's call is also being webcast, and a replay will be available on SNC-Lavalin website within 24 hours. With us today are Robert Card, President and Chief Executive Officer, Alain-Pierre Renaud, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, and Neil Bruce, Chief Operating Officer. Our earnings announcement was released this morning, and we have posted a slide presentation on our website, which we will refer to during our call. Before we begin, I would like to ask everyone to limit themselves to two or three questions to ensure that all analysts have an opportunity to participate. You are welcome to return to the queue for any follow-up questions. I would also like to remind you that, as detailed on slide three, certain statements or comments made during today's call and slide presentation may be forward-looking. Such statements or comments represent management's best judgment and expectation as of today's date, are subject to certain risks, uncertainties, and assumptions, which are described in our financial documents and cannot be guaranteed. I would now like to turn the conference over to Robert Card.
Merci, Denis, and thank you all for joining us today. Our recently awarded contracts and a strengthening pipeline of opportunities are creating backlog stability for us in spite of a challenging commodities market. This is a testament to our team's hard work and progress. The new projects announced are representative of the quality of those we will continue to compete for and win. We're especially pleased with the confidence demonstrated in us by federal and provincial governments, as well as top-tier private sector clients. Notably, the Government of Canada recently chose the Canadian National Energy Alliance, which includes SNC-Lavalin, to be the preferred bidder to manage and operate the nuclear laboratories at Chalk River. This major project extends SNC-Lavalin's track record of operating important government facilities, and it broadens our nuclear experience to lab operations and decommissioning. With our solid backlog and bid pipeline, we're well positioned to deliver strong performance in the second half, and we are maintaining our outlook for 2015 of adjusted EPS from engineering and construction in the range of $1.30-$1.60. We believe the oil and gas and power segments will be the main contributors. The infrastructure and construction sub-segment continues to face headwinds from certain major projects, but is steadily improving its outlook and stability. Regarding ICI assets, as we stated on last quarter's call, we continue to make good progress against our strategy of monetizing Canadian assets within our infrastructure concession investments portfolio, consistent with our objective to build value for our E&C business. As noted last quarter, we are committed to launching the formal sale of our investment in Highway 407 by the end of this year. We also continue to make progress on maximizing the value of our other assets and expect to close on a solution for many of them in the next several months as well. Moving on to ethics. As you may have seen, in early July, Public Works and Government Services Canada announced its new integrity framework. Revision makes improvements in many areas related to the procurement of goods and services by the federal government, and we look forward to working with Public Works in that regard. We understand that the revisions in the integrity framework will be applied on Canada's legal structure, specifically a deferred prosecution agreement, or DPA. As previously noted, a DPA framework, which exists in the U.S., U.K., and other countries, can incentivize ethics, compliance, and rapid self-reporting while holding companies accountable for past actions and preserving jobs and benefits to the economy. We believe that a DPA will require separate legislation, policy, and rulemaking, and we've been encouraged by the recent support for this expressed by key thought leaders, with many of them published prominently in the popular media. With our ethics and compliance system now fully implemented, we believe that we have become a global benchmark in our industry, and we intend to keep improving on that high standard. Now, moving on to our financial results. Earnings for the quarter were 27 million, or 0.17 per diluted share, as compared to 32 million, or 0.21 per diluted share in 2014. Our adjusted net income from E&C for the quarter was 8 million, or 0.05 per diluted share, compared to a net loss of 27 million, or -0.18 per diluted share for the second quarter of 2014. The quarter includes a negative EBIT in the infrastructure and construction subsegment due to challenging soil conditions relating to the tunnel portion of a mass transit project and additional costs to secure the completion date on a major highway project, both in Canada. Our ongoing efforts to streamline operations and enhance our organization, process, and systems are expected to improve project delivery and forecasting. Therefore, we believe that the historical volatility in the backlog will continue to dissipate. ICI continued to perform well with a net income of $45 million, or 29 cents per diluted share. Revenues for the quarter increased by 33% to $2.3 billion, and our revenue backlog increased to $12.4 billion at quarter end, with $2.9 billion of bookings in the quarter. Regarding capital allocation, during the quarter, we also announced our intention to repurchase up to 13.3 million common shares as permitted by law and subject to market conditions and other considerations. Including share repurchases and dividends, we returned over $160 million to shareholders in the first 6 months of the year. Our balanced capital allocation strategy allows us to maintain financial flexibility to continue to fund our growth opportunities while providing cash returns to our shareholders. Moving now to our segment review. We continue to believe that oil and gas will be a primary driver of 2015 revenues and future growth, and our recent contract wins underscore our confidence. The Kent's transaction has given us entry to key market segments in oil and gas, such as production, sustaining capital, and infrastructure investment. Given the strength of these segments, our geographic market positions, especially in the Middle East, our positioning in LNG, and our experience in deep relationships within the industry, we believe we're well positioned to minimize the impact of the industry downturn. We are not expecting a material improvement in oil prices for many months. In mining and metallurgy, we continue to have encouraging discussions with customers who are working to position themselves for an eventual market recovery, with several opportunities emerging. We're also having positive discussions with them about expanding our services and our involvement in sustaining capital work to extend and improve their existing mines and operations. However, we remain cautious on our outlook and still do not see the beginning of a general recovery until at least the end of 2016. Power provides a mixed near-term outlook with the winds and nuclear at Chalk River and thermal in Maryland offset by delays in other awarded or committed projects, as noted for those two subsectors last quarter. That said, and you've seen in our press releases, slowly but surely these awarded or committed projects are moving into backlog. The recently announced power plant emissions regulations for the United States has the potential to provide a market boost for both our thermal and T&D subsectors in 2016 and beyond. T&D remains in the process of converting from its historical AlphaLink backlog and has begun early phase study work on several projects in the U.S. Hydro continues to perform well. In infrastructure and construction, as discussed earlier, our quarterly results were negatively impacted by challenges and additional costs on two non-legacy projects. However, we believe we've addressed the matter that caused this quarter's technical challenges and acceleration needs, and we're confident that our project delivery initiatives are on track. Last quarter, we told you we were selected as the preferred bidder by the Government of Canada for the new Champlain Bridge Corridor project over the St. Lawrence River. We have since achieved financial close in that project, which has a total value of approximately $2.1 billion. We appreciate the government trusting us with such an important endeavor and look forward to delivering this vital infrastructure to support Canada and Quebec's growth. We're also very pleased to have been awarded and to have achieved financial closure on the approximately $5 billion Eglinton Crosstown Light Rail Transit project in Ontario. The project will be delivered by the CrossLinks Transit Solutions Consortium, where SNC-Lavalin and its three partners each have an equal interest in the equity, development, construction, and maintenance activities for the project. Importantly, both of these projects have gone through a rigorous bid, planning, and startup process to ensure that we can deliver to our announced margin expectations or better. We continue to see a robust pipeline of new infrastructure opportunities in Canada. Operations and maintenance performance continues to exceed plan and to have a good prospect pipeline. We are pleased to have been awarded a contract to manage the facilities of the Nisreb properties in Doha, Qatar. In the O&M community, this is viewed as a landmark project and a key win for us. In summary, while commodities headwinds continue to build, we look forward to a strong finish for the year, particularly in Q4. This expectation is anchored by our project capture success and our focus on operational excellence through our organization and project delivery improvements. With that, I'll pass the call over to Len Pierre to discuss our results in more detail. Len Pierre?
Thank you, Bob. Good afternoon, everyone. I will now take you through the financial results for the quarter. Please go to slide 6. Revenues for the first 6 months ended June 30, 2015, increased by 32% to $4.5 billion compared to $3.4 billion for 2014. This increase is due to incremental revenues in the oil and gas segment resulting from the Kent acquisition in late 2014, as well as an increase in the power segment, which increased as the company is no longer required to eliminate E&C revenues generated between the company and AltaLink since its disposal in 2014. This was partially offset by a decrease in infrastructure and construction, operations and maintenance, and ICI revenues. Infrastructure and construction revenue decreased principally due to the completion of a major hospital project, but we expect this trend to reverse as we have recently been awarded major projects in that segment. OEM revenues decreased due to the non-renewal of an unprofitable contract for the management of government properties in Canada, while ICI revenue decreased due to the disposal of our AltaLink investment in 2014. The total gross margin amount for the first 6 months was $639 million compared to $706 million for the same period in 2014. E&C gross margin increased by $126 million to $537 million, while the ICI gross margin decreased by $193 million due to the sale of AltaLink. The E&C gross margin increase is due to higher volume of activity, partially offset by the impact of the challenges and additional costs recorded in the second quarter on two major projects in the infrastructures and construction subsegment. Year to date, SG&A expense totaled $430 million compared to $395 million for the same period in 2014. I will discuss this variance on the following slide. We continue to execute our restructuring and right-sizing plan announced last November, recording $7.7 million of restructuring costs in the second quarter of 2015 for a total of $8.2 million for the first 6 months of the year. As announced, this plan should continue for another 8 months and is expected to result in approximately $40 million of after-tax charges. We also recorded $5 million of integration and acquisition-related costs in the second quarter, for a total of $30 million year-to-date. Amortization of intangible assets in connection with the Kent acquisition totaled $20 million this quarter and $42 for the first 6 months of the year. There was a net financial income for the first 6 months of the year of $19 million compared to a net financial expense of $140 million in 2014. This positive variance of $133 million is mainly explained by, first, the non-recourse debt reduction due to the sale of AltaLink, which triggered a decrease of $91 million in our net financial expense, and second, a $37 million one-time net foreign exchange gain, which was crystallized in the first quarter of 2015. Lastly, on this slide, we see that our IFRS net income was $131 million for the first 6 months of 2015, compared to $127 million in 2014. Turning now to slide 7. This slide shows a reconciliation to the adjusted consolidated net income, which for the first 6 months period ended June 30, 2015, was $147 million, in line with the same period last year. The adjusted net income from E&C was $65 million compared to an adjusted net income of $5 million in 2014. This increase is due to higher contribution from our oil and gas, power, and mining and metallurgy segments, partially offset by a negative EBIT in infrastructure and construction, and a lower contribution from OEM. I will give you more details in a minute on the following slide. There was no adjustment to the net income from ICI, which stood at $82 million in 2015 compared to $143 million in 2014 due to the sale of AltaLink in 2014, which is no longer contributing in 2015. Now, turning to slide 8. SG&A expenses totaled $430 million for the first 6 months of 2015, compared to $395 million in 2014. It's important to note that 2014 excluded Cairns SG&A, as the acquisition was completed in August. On a like-to-like basis, without Cairns, year-to-date SG&A expenses decreased by $54 billion, mainly due to our restructuring and right-sizing efforts. As you can also see, the total SG&A over revenue ratio decreased to 10% due to an incremental volume of activity from Cairns, and while it is still not to the level we would prefer, we are making good progress toward our goal to reduce this ratio to a level below the average of our peers. Slide 9 presents the segment EBIT. As you can see, the ICI segment EBIT for the first quarter of 2015, as expected, is contributing less due to the sale of Altalink in 2014. The power segment shows improvements but was negatively impacted in the quarter by an unfavorable reforecast on a nearly completed project outside Canada that reduced the gross margin by $15 million. Mining and metallurgy did better than last year, mainly due to lower G&A expenses. Oil and gas segment continues to perform well, especially considering the current environment. The infrastructure and construction subsegment had another challenging quarter with a negative year-to-date EBIT of $54 million. This was mainly due to challenging soil conditions relating to the tunnel portion of a mass transit project and additional costs to secure the completion date on a major highway project, both in Canada. Lastly, we were pleased by the continued performance of the OEM subsegment. Now, turning to slide 10. Revenue backlog totaled $12.4 billion at the end of June 2015. This is slightly higher than December 2014, but 51% higher from 1 year ago. Bookings for the second quarter were $2.9 billion and included the new bridge for the Saint Laurent Corridor project and the 755-megawatt Keys Energy Center power project. The increase compared to June 2014 is also due to the addition of Kent's revenue backlog. The June 2015 revenue backlog does not yet include the Eglinton Crosstown Lightweight Transit Project, which will be booked in the third quarter. Book-to-bill ratio in the quarter stood at 1.35, while year-to-date book-to-bill ratio was 1.01. Slide 11 now. This slide shows our financial position. Two variations are worth mentioning. First, cash and cash equivalent totaled $934 million as of June 30, 2015, in line with the $853 million at the end of June 2014, but lower than the $1.7 billion at year-end, December 31, 2014, due to a transition period, which I will explain in a moment. Secondly, non-recourse short-term debt totaled $224 million as of June 30, 2015, versus a nil balance in December 2014. Let's turn now to slide 12 for more details. As you can see, the most significant variation was the net change in non-cash working capital items. This variation, which is a timing issue, is mainly due to increased working capital requirements noted by a significant decrease in accounts payable in the second quarter. This reflects a transition from cash used for project nearing completion, burning down payments on contract, paying payables and recognizing deferred revenues to newly recently award contract. A working capital optimization program has also been put in place, mainly aiming to further reduce our average number of days to collect our receivables and bill our work in progress. As the backlog continues to grow and as we continue to progress on recent projects, we expect the cash decline trend to reverse and return to higher cash balance by the end of the year. Also note that we returned over $160 million to shareholders in the first 6 months through dividends and share buybacks. We continue to believe that our current liquidity position, including our cash and credit facility, are sufficient to fund our operation for the foreseeable future. Now, turning to slide 13. We are maintaining our previously announced 2015 outlook. Adjusted EPS from E&C is expected to be in a range of $1.30 per share to $1.60, and reported IFRS EPS is expected to be in the range of $1.80 to $2.10. This concludes our presentation. We can now open the line for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, it is star 1 to ask a question. And your first question comes from the line of Sarah O'Brien with RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
On the newly awarded project, Champlain and Eglinton will be positive, at least as good as sort of the 7 to 10% range expected, just given the what was seen in Q2 with Canadian projects.
Yeah, so Sarah, somehow you didn't cut in right off the bat, but I think I've got your question. So we're quite comfortable at this phase with these projects. We have an elaborately improved bid estimate evaluation process. I might remind that the two that we've talked about, we do not see as recurring issues, and we see these as very different circumstances than the legacy projects we've been talking about in the past. On the tunnel project actually went quite well, but when we stopped the machine for maintenance, the soil conditions were surprising and it was hard for us to hold pressure in the tunnel, and that caused us a delay, which is really the cost increase. It's not for the tunneling cost per se. And that project had been on our watch list, and we had hoped that it wouldn't have that issue, but we've now instituted corrective measures for the next couple stops that are required, and we don't expect that problem again. And further on the other project, we have that had that under an acceleration plan already, and went through a re-estimate for conservatism and concluded that we needed to be more conservative on it. But again, we're not expecting further news on that one either. So that we put this in a bit of a different category for the way we manage them than some of the issues we've been talking about before.
So the road work you expect to complete by the approved date, and this is more like a overtime type cost to get to that date?
Yeah, we've done a massive acceleration effort to hit the date.
Okay. And the beginning of my question was, what gives you the confidence that the new project signed, Champlain and Eglinton, will be in a range of, and is it 7 to 10% gross margin expectation, or has that changed?
No, that's correct. So during the bid process, we had a lot of cross-checking and rechecking with our partners doing separate estimates. We have a very structured process now for the startup of the projects. I'm pleased to report that both of them are evolving just as we expected or better at the moment. And we're very comfortable with our teaming partners. We've got long-term relationships and have produced profitable work with them elsewhere. So at this point, they're always challenging projects, these monster projects, but we're quite comfortable with them. And I might remind the listeners that on these types of projects, they've historically been profitable for us.
Okay. And then maybe just moving to oil and gas, and just given the pressure on oil price right now, what is the expectation on backlog replenishment, and when do you need to get concerned about it, and when do you start seeing what kind of margins are going to play out into F-16-17 with bookings?
It's Neil here. I think in terms of, well, what you would have seen in terms of our ongoing results is that we are seeing a fairly typical piece within the market, that ultimately the more that you operate within the front end of the value chain within oil and gas, then the more that has actually been affected. So what we're actually seeing is reasonable results within the oil and gas sector. We're seeing a little bit down in the front end of the projects. We're seeing a little bit down in terms of our manufacturing piece on the compressor facilities and the likes, but we're actually seeing an increase in the field operations, in the sustaining capital, and specifically with the NOCs. So from that perspective, we are seeing fluctuations, but effectively most of it to date has certainly balanced itself out. In terms of your question around the backlog, then there is certainly, we've got a great deal of focus on the whole BD effort and contracts and bookings in the second half of this year to make sure that we are entering into 16 and then, an element of 17 in a healthy state. So we think we're in the right, in the main, we think we're in the right subsegments of the market with predominantly the right customers, and we feel cautiously optimistic about the outlook there.
Okay, thanks. And maybe, Bob, just going back to the infrastructure, one more question on the Q4 expected positive contribution to the guidance. I guess it could be Neil too. Oil and gas related or power related. Just wondering, what is it in particular? Is it a particular contract that's closing and that is expected to be greatly profitable, or is it new work that starts up in that time frame?
Well, we have in our plan is the combination of all of those, really. So we've obviously, you expect we're continuously, but especially at quarter close, really taking a hard look at our ability to meet guidance. And so if we don't think we can meet it, you're going to hear about it right away. So this is a bottoms-up, top-down build-up of where we see this happening. And I pointed towards Q4 because there's a lot of things happening on the boundary, and things tend to shift to the right. So Q4 looks more like it than Q3 for us. But we've got a number of positive things happening on our radar screen in Q4, and both in terms of build-up of new work and also good news on closing out contracts.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Michael Tupholme of TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Just wanted to go back to the oil and gas segment. In terms of the areas where you are seeing a decent amount of strength, Neil, just wondering if you can talk about the competitive conditions. I mean, I gather there are areas where there are opportunities, but I suspect those are fairly competitive.
So the particular areas of strength is very much around the ongoing work that we're doing within the LNG projects in Australia as we continue to help and assist our clients complete on these major projects. The particular area of strength for us is very much wide across the Middle East, and that's where a large proportion of our sustaining capital, our completions, commissioning and completions contracts with the national oil companies and with some of our selected IOCs are being, we're effectively seeing a really strong BD there and strong progress. One of our key IOC customers there, we're actually being quite successful in the Middle East around contracts to do with Iraq, to do with the work that we execute in Dubai principally, and also within UAE and Saudi Arabia. There's been other successes in Qatar, for instance, but generally across the Middle East, we are seeing that as a strong location for us. And I also think that because the areas we're looking at in sustaining capital and also in the field services, we do have real differentiated services there. So the competitive landscape in terms of competitors trying to get into that market is quite difficult to do that in the short term, albeit we do see customers very focused on the cost delivery of the work.
And just to follow up on that last bit there, Neil, is that mainly them looking for price concessions, or are they trying to target, or are you trying to find between yourselves and your clients other ways to realize those benefits for them?
Well, the conversation starts around cost, which if we don't come up with good value-added solutions for them to be able to deliver something in a more efficient way, then the conversation will stay at the cost level. So really the challenge for us is to address their cost concerns, but to effectively come up with more efficient ways of doing it so that effectively we are reducing their outturn costs without affecting our margins. That's the real day-to-day challenge for us today.
Okay, perfect. And then for Alain-Pierre, question on the corporate SG&A expenses. They were about double in Q2 what they were in Q1. Wondering if you can just help me understand what's going on there, and secondly, what a reasonable run rate to expect going forward is.
Yeah, first you have to consider that our cycle in terms of Q2 is systematically above Q1, historically. Okay? Is Q1, people start, does not engage all their initiative and so on, and you have, let's say, the ramping up all over the quarter, and in fact Q2 mechanically is above Q1, first point. Second point, if you compare quarter to quarter, Q2 last year to Q2 this year, you will observe, as I mentioned, a decrease in our percentage of the revenue. Second, on a like-to-like basis, we are declining, either in terms of AG&A on our legacy scope and in terms of initiative. It means that we have been capable to absorb two-thirds of the additional G&A contributed by CANS. At your end, this trend will continue, and we are reasonably confident that we will deliver a performance, as we already declare and disclose, in line with the average of our peers.
I think also, Len Pierre, we're still on target to reduce again, as we've said, in 2016.
Yeah, obviously.
Are you able to provide some guidance on how to think about Q3 and Q4 in dollar terms for the corporate SG&A?
We don't deliver this type of guidance on a quarterly basis for whatever the category of cost could be. But let's say, as we mentioned, as Bob just comments, we organize additional regular saving program in order, let's say, to align the run rate we observe on H1, Q1 and Q2, which is very good as an average, in order to be certain that we'll be at the same level on the second part of the year.
Okay, thanks very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Yuri Lynk of Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you. Bob, just back on the guidance. I mean, it's obviously implies a pretty substantial ramp in Q3 and then I guess into Q4. I mean, just give us a bit more color. I mean, was the second quarter as expected? It sounds like these issues, you might have seen them coming on the two projects. And then in the fourth quarter, is it in fact closeout margins, or is it the reversal of any perhaps past legacy charges that you might have taken that are getting you to such big sequential increases throughout the back half of the year?
Well, first of all, Yuri, it's important that Q2, if you're looking at our expectation for Q2, you've got to add in over $50 million back in from the projects we discussed. So the ramp-up isn't nearly as big if you look at the run rate without those surprises. In terms of and I don't know there's much more I can say about the characteristic of what we might see in the second half, but it's the normal budgeting process that we went through to give you the guidance in March is still active. And so it's this same cocktail of things there, which is you know, we are being more successful, we see this year, in closing out projects successfully. You've seen new projects that are beginning to ramp up, and there's a blend of things that that we feel at this point pretty comfortable that we can deliver for Q3 and Q4.
Okay, and maybe I missed it, but the two projects that kind of gummed up this quarter in infrastructure, remind me when those will be completed?
Those are longer-term projects. They'll probably both be completed next year. But
okay.
They're substantially complete except for that targeted issue right now.
Okay. And last quick one, maybe for Neil. In your oil and gas outlook, any thoughts on the potential strike at Gorgon, and if that could would that negatively impact your scope of work on that project?
Well, we've been on the site there since 2009, and in terms of the relationships overall, the relationships have actually been pretty good, pretty positive all the way through, and clearly people are working through in terms of the industrial relations issues and dialogue to try and make sure that there's an amicable settlement to all of that. So from that perspective, we don't really see at this moment in time, we don't really see a huge impact or a big impact on Gorgon from all of that. We're pretty optimistic that a solution can be found.
But if there is a strike, that might be different. Is that what you're saying?
Well, if there's a strike, then that will be different, and then ultimately it will be the duration of all of that.
Okay. Thanks for taking my questions.
Your next question comes from the line of Benoit Poirier with Desjardins Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much. Just to come back on your guidance, I was wondering how much do you rely on Champlain and also Eglinton to meet the second half expectation?
Well, we don't break that out, Benoit, but and as we said, those are more 2016 type projects, so it's handy to have them, but they're not a key driver.
Okay, and looking at your mining margin of 8.5 was relatively high compared to what you reported in the past few years. So what should we expect going forward in terms of mining margins?
Well, Neil, let's see if you have a comment on this as well. But I think, you know, we've slimmed that group down, and so it's just a more efficient delivery operation right now, so they're having a great year, and you know it's hard to predict ahead in this commodities market when we seem to be hitting new lows every week. But I think we've got a great team there, and we're optimistic. Neil, you want to add anything?
Yeah, no, I think you're seeing the results of the mining sector in particular was the first of our four key sectors where we took early action in terms of standardizing and simplifying the organization. And despite the fact that there is, you know, a downturn in the commodities market generally, we do have a fairly unique position in the fertilizers and sulfuric acid markets, where we're actually doing particularly well, I think, in comparison to the competition. So that's the main reasons why we're doing reasonably well in this down market.
Okay. And for the Ambatovi project, how much should we expect in terms of proceeds with the upcoming divestiture? And also, what timeline are we looking for the divestiture process?
Well, I don't think we disclose that. But, we're cautiously optimistic. As you know, that's a complicated project. The team's done an outstanding job, and we're I don't know if there's a lot more I can say because there's it's such a huge swing one way or the other that I'm really reluctant to put a stake in the ground on that one.
Okay.
So we're working really hard to make it successful.
Okay. And last question, in terms of regulatory framework, what are the next steps for you guys?
And you would be referring to the Government of Canada issue?
Exactly. I was just wondering what are the next step we should be monitoring going forward.
Well, you know, there's two work streams there. One is we are still, you know, our principal focus is on seeking an accommodation with the government that does all the things we've talked about. It enhances ethics and compliance and self-reporting and accountability and protects jobs in the economy. That's our focus. If you look at the trial process that's underway, there'll be another series. We are through our second iteration. There'll be one to many more of those as evidence is collected, and that's the journey that goes on for a very long time on that track. But as I said, we have no expectation that that's the track we're going to stay on.
Okay, thanks for the time.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, it is star one on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from the line of Maxim Sichkev of Dundee Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. Just a quick question going back to the infrastructure division. I mean, obviously, you're telegraphing right now that the embedded margin in new work, which is supposed to be coming up, is in a typical sort of range. But looking out to 2016, and again, is there enough work right now? Is it conceivable for you to actually be EBIT positive in 16, or you don't have enough of control in that division to be able to ascertain that?
Well, I think. Maxim, as I said last call, I think we were looking for a black zero in 16 and returning to industry norms in 17, and we're still on that track, and I think feeling increasingly optimistic about that. We have a very strong pipeline of projects. We feel good about what we've been winning. The team is really shaping up nicely. I don't know if, Neil, you want to make any comment about that. But the whole, I mean, in spite of this really disappointing news this quarter, the whole operation feels a lot more on track to me. So I'm optimistic. Neil, any comment?
Yeah, no, I support that. I mean, the work that we're doing on simplifying the organization, streamlining it, the work that we're doing around operational excellence and delivery, applies equally to infrastructure. I think my one of my earlier comments around the mining group is we certainly did a fair bit of work there first, but ultimately we are following up and standardizing this across all four sectors, of which infrastructure are playing their part in all of that too.
Okay, that's helpful. And actually, circling back to mining, obviously, impressive performance from an EBIT perspective, but what is the revenue and the backlog replenishment outlook in that division specifically?
I mean, I think the market is difficult, and as we said earlier, it's looking flat all the way through, certainly through next year. So that continues to be challenging, but we are very much looking at the sustaining capital elements of mining together with the front end and feed engineering in mining as well in terms. So we see difficult conditions in terms of the bigger EPCMs, but we see opportunities in feed and in sustaining capital within that sector.
And do you care just specify which commodities specifically or it's across the board?
No, I think it's typically across. We, as I said, sulfuric acid, fertilizers, certainly copper. We're operating in a large amount of copper projects in aluminium, and then the others are. I think everybody knows what's happening with most of the other base metals.
I think clearly coal and iron ore. There's not a lot going
on.
Absolutely.
And so, gentlemen, just one last for me, in terms of any updates on 4-7 capital allocation, just where your head is at right now?
No change, Maxim. So we've said we expect to launch the sale process this year, and as I said in my talk, that's what we're still expecting. So we see the market is actually developing nicely. We think we gained some ground in the last quarter. We continue to look at all the factors I've talked about in the past, which is what's the selling environment, which we think improved. We're watching interest rates carefully, you know, how are we doing as a company, and what's the transaction mean for our strategy. So.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Paul Lechem of CIBC. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Question on the power segment. You have a couple of business development agreements, one on the transmission and distribution side with Berkshire Hathaway Energy and the other on the nuclear side with the Chinese. Just wondering if you can give us any updates, if there's any tangible progress made on either one of those agreements or in terms of new business development opportunities?
Sure. So on the, you know, because of confidentiality with our partners, I'm going to be more obtuse than you asked in my response. I apologize for that, Paul, but I'll just say that things are going really well in our partnerships, and we have a whole bunch of different studies underway for opportunities. So we're optimistic about that. And, you know, depends on typically stuff doesn't happen really fast in the power industry, but there's, as you've seen, a lot of coal plants coming offline already in the U.S. If the current regulations simply trigger faster action on stuff that was already in the pipeline, that could generate, you know, more near-term work in that regard. So we're optimistic about that. Yes, and a lot of studies going on. In terms of the nuclear side, I didn't mention that in my talk, but it still remains very active. And so we're well into detailed discussions with our Chinese partners on a whole number of opportunities, and we remain optimistic. But I always have to say this with, you know, take three grains of salt with that, because nuclear tends to be slow. But there's been no diminution of those opportunities in the last quarter.
In terms of your transmission and distribution group that is working on the AltaLink projects, can those people be reassigned once, if there aren't any further T&D work to be done, can they be reassigned to other types of power projects, or are they pretty specific to that kind of work? Just trying to think about that.
Well, first of all, there's a whole, you know, there's a lot of people in the power group that translate freely between the various sectors. And, for example, we build substations in all of them. So there is a lot of mobility, and further, the T&D people we have that have worked for AltaLink can also work on other T&D projects, and they have. So we're the main constraint becomes geographical, of whether the work needs to be done physically somewhere else and are people willing to relocate for it.
Okay. Last question. Any other major bids out that you're hoping to get decisions on through the end of the year, similar size to what we've seen on the Champlain Bridge and Eglinton Crosstown? Thanks.
Can you, Paul, you broke up or something. Can you repeat that, please?
Yeah, sorry. Just a question in terms of, are there any other major bids out across your various divisions that you hope to get a decision on through the end of this year, similar size to what you've seen in the Champlain Bridge and at Eglinton Crosstown? Anything of that ilk that you might get a decision on by year end?
Yeah, there are, a small handful of power projects where, again, we've been awarded the work, but it hasn't, we don't have final notice to proceed. And at least one of those, they're all in the hundreds of millions, but one of those is bigger than that. So that's sitting out there. In terms of infrastructure P3 awards, I'd have to check, but I think the nearest one I'm aware of was probably the Q1.
Yeah.
rather than Q4.
Yeah.
But we have a whole number of them underway.
Great. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Frederic Bastien with Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Thank you. You gave us an update on the 407 sale process, but I was wondering if you could do the same for the basket of Canadian ICIs that you are shopping around.
Len Pierre?
Yeah. We are, as we already announced, we are preparing this this project to monetize these remaining assets. We are now, let's say, in a good shape to design what will be the option we will retain. And we still expect that it will be public before the end of the year.
Sorry, what do you mean by public? Made known
on investors? On the market.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Your next question comes from the line of Sarah O'Brien of RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi. I'm just going to catch that last sentence you said, Alain Pierre. On the market, you mean you're going to float these concessions as an IPO?
No, we don't disclose the options we will retain. What we say, we announce that we will monetize our assets, and we distinguish between two categories, 407 on one side, the other assets. We are referring to the other assets, and as I mentioned, we will monetize them before the end of the year.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're hoping, Sarah, to actually receive the benefit by the end of the year. We're not committing to that in this case, but that's our plan.
Okay, and solutions could include floating them public, or is it more like individual sales?
We don't comment about that.
Okay. And just, Bob, on the integrity framework, the new integrity framework for the Government of Canada, just wondering, is there a time frame that you expect? I know there's an administrative agreement that you need to enter into. Is there a timeline, to meet so that you can ensure that SNC can bid on projects like the Gordie Howe Bridge?
Yeah, at this point, we're not planning on an obstacle to bid on the Gordie Howe Bridge. So, we have a good relationship with Public Works, and I'm confident that whatever we need to do with them, we will successfully do.
Okay.
But there's no timeline that we're particularly concerned about at this point.
Okay. Thank you.
There are no further questions at this time. Please continue.
Thank you all for joining us today. If you have any further questions, please do not hesitate to contact me. Have a good night, everyone. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect your lines.